As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletic's Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're here doing the postmortem thing. Earlier in the week, me and Caitlin McGrath, who covers the team for The Athletic, broke it down. Make sure you go subscribe to the show, find that, listen to it, check it out, what we had to say in the sober light of day on Tuesday. Here we are, a couple days later, me and the other co-host of Spin Rate, Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays All-Star, joins me from beautiful downtown the beach. Ricky, he was there at the game. Now we're here to talk about what happened. How's it going, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Still processing this whole thing. I mean, I've talked to a few guys and staff members, and the first thing that comes out of their text messages is, I can't believe it. I still can't believe it. And it's one of those things where I feel like it's going to sting all offseason. Again, you go through the pains of what they did last season and missing the playoffs by a game, then you finally make the playoffs, and to lose the way they did, it's just, it's almost like it wasn't supposed to end like this. And that's why I tweeted after the game, like, man, like sports, man, they can crush you. They can break your heart. And if you're on the opposing side, they can absolutely lift your spirits up. And obviously Seattle did what they had to do, man. I mean, they're a fun team. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. They're a fun team, and I'm really rooting for them just for the simple fact that they're the underdogs. Kind of stinks that they got a little bit of a taste of a comeback against them, right? I mean, to be able to go into Houston and almost beat their ace. I mean, they pretty much beat him down, and to not come out on top, obviously, it can be a huge factor in the series. But yeah, man, it was tough. I mean, I got a red-eye flight last Thursday, and I was there. Pumped up, man. I even took the GO train. I wanted to get all the feels, honestly, Drew. And I had never experienced the playoffs in Toronto as a player or as a fan. And I was like, you know what? I want to take the train down. I want to see what it's like. And I want to see what the whole action is outside of it. And it was really cool, man. Again, like, you can't deny that the fandom in Toronto is beyond awesome. I mean, everyone rallies behind one team. The whole country, I feel like all eyes are on the Toronto Blue Jays, and taking the GO train, just getting the feels of that and getting off the GO train and then just seeing a million Blue Jay jerseys all over the city, just the buzz. So you got to tip your hat off to the fans and them coming out and rooting their team on all season. And I'll tell you what, man, it is fucking loud in that stadium. Like, I was next to Travis Snyder, and like, we were yelling at each other, like to try and have a conversation. That's how loud it was. And again, an awesome, awesome atmosphere, something that me as a fan will never forget, just because it's, again, it's cool to be in that scene and take it all in and just be a fan. Again, it was awesome. And I've never heard on Saturday, obviously everyone's feeling high. I feel like everyone's like, man, like, what, we're going to have a game tomorrow. You see it on TV, but I never knew what it was like to, like, literally hear a pin drop at a stadium by the end of that game. It was crazy. It was like, I felt like I played. I felt like I was like somebody just stabbed me in the heart. Like, we were in the suite. I was like with my head down, like, oh my God, like my stomach like felt funny. I did not want to do anything. I even told the lady in charge of our flights, I was like, you know what? Get me out of here. I left the very next day. I was supposed to leave Monday, obviously, because we thought we were going to have a game just in case of a game three. And I said, get me out of here. I was that like mad, like we're going to go out and maybe have some drinks and enjoy downtown, enjoy all this atmosphere. Dude, we literally just went to dinner. And I said, all right, I'm getting an Uber and I'm going home. And that's it. Like, I felt like I played. It hit me that hard. I was like, damn it. Like, my phone is blowing up. And I feel like I said, it felt like a player. Like, guys are like, what the fuck? What the fuck? What's going on? And I'm like, I did not respond to anybody. Like, again, that's how much the Toronto Blue Jays organization, the players, I have a deep connection with some of them. And I was hurt for them. The people that work for the Toronto Blue Jays, the people that set up the alumni events, the people that do all the behind the work scene. Like, I felt awful for them. Awful. Just because it's crazy, right? I mean, you go from you're celebrating a few days before that, and then you go to this, and it's like the absolute heartbreak. So again, I mean, it was a fun season, and I'm sure those guys obviously got to get to work and come back hungrier next season and be ready.
Crazy. I'm so glad that we have you because I really want to get your perspective on the games. We'll kind of go back a little bit. You know, Caitlin and I kind of broke it down, but obviously I'd love to know what you saw, what you thought. And then so number one, and then number two, we'll talk about that work. What is that work that's ahead? Where do we think about where the Jays are? There's a lot of kind of knee-jerk reactionary stuff that's almost a little bit surprising to me. But let's start with the game. So, you know, you go in there on Friday night and the roof is ready to blow off. You said you go through the sea of fans. I can only imagine, you know, what that walk through the skywalk, through Union Station, just unbelievable atmosphere, everybody having a great time. You go in and then three runs in the top of the first, and then Luis Castillo just starts to shove. in the end, Alec Manoah pitched pretty well, but I don't know what you saw in the first inning. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, shit happens, but like, in this case, it happened to the Blue Jays. Number one, you know, a couple missed spots and then a home run, and then Castillo just absolutely shoving, which I think is the biggest story from Friday's game, game one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. And the one thing I saw about Manoah, and we've seen it in the past, where it's almost like he was over-amped up. And it's hard. Like, people are like, oh, well, why can't he calm down? Some people ask me, and I'm like, because there's so much energy in this place. There's so much energy, your adrenaline rush. It's his first playoff game, and he wants to do so well that sometimes you're throwing a pitch and you're just like, calm yourself down. But it's like, your wheels are spinning so fast that it's hard to do that. I've been there. I've been in that situation. And again, it's something that he's going to learn from. Obviously, he got the first one out of the way, but I know he took it hard, but in no way should he have his head down over that start, because he gave the team a chance to win. And we were talking about this before we went live. Luis Castillo could have shut down any offense that day. Like, he was completely filthy, completely in control. Just the reason why they acquired him. And I was in the suite with Edwin Encarnacion. That was also pretty cool to watch him come back, throw out the first pitch and do all that stuff. It was cool. The place went crazy. And I asked him, I was like, what do you do here? He's like, dude, you tip your hat off to him. Like, holy shit. Like, how is this even fair? Like, you can't really sit on one pitch. You can't sit on a sinker in at 100 because he's doing so well at mixing his pitches that he's going to throw you a 97 up and away. And then as soon as he gets you diving that way, he's going to throw you that sinker at 100 at your hands. And not only that, he's throwing a nasty slider down and away. So he's like, he's got three pitches right there that he's throwing for a strike, and he's just on top of his game. I was like, so what do you do? Like, how do you approach this? He's like, you got to cheat to one pitch and hope you guess right. And that was it. That was his thing. Like, you better hope you guess right, because other than that, he's going to be tough. And from the first inning, you just saw how calm he was, how he just went about his game. And again, I felt like every time he felt like a guy was about to dive or about to sit on that sinker in, boom, away, boom, sinker in. And when one of the best hitters I ever got to play with is telling me, like, yeah, you got to cheat to one pitch and sit on one pitch, that's how hard it was.
and the fact that you have to cheat and guess right. And it's not even a 50-50 chance, Drew. He's got three pitches. You know, you got maybe a 30-something percent chance that it's going to be that pitch. Luis Castillo was filthy, man. And you got to tip your hat off to him. Like, you could have put Barry Bonds up there. He might have struggled against him.
It's entirely fair. And I think that that's the difference that stuff makes, too, in the game in 2022, that when Edwin's like, you got to cheat to one pitch, we've seen the game change even from the time when Edwin was at his absolute peak, where, you know, that late era Blue Jays team where they stopped throwing fastballs to Edwin, to Jose Bautista, and to Josh Donaldson. So you're cheating to one pitch, but the stuff is so good that even if it's not perfect, you're still up against a really tough pitch. You know, his command was so good, like for all the reasons you said, nothing left over the heart. He was throwing 100 to the corners. You can't help but give credit to him. And, you know, what we'll talk about a little bit is people are starting to ask questions about the way the team was built. But, like, I don't know. I think when someone's pitching that well for that long, you can't help but give them credit. And would an amazing left-handed hitter, if the Blue Jays had, you know, I don't, Shohei Ohtani in their lineup. Shohei Ohtani striking out against Luis Castillo. Like, you know, we've all watched Shohei, you know, great as he is. He's not afraid to strike out, and he's not afraid to get exposed against a premium velocity. So it just puts them in a tough spot, and you can't help but credit them. I think that on balance, the Jays, you know, played pretty well on Friday night, but just couldn't get any offense going because they were just that good. They had their chances at the end.
And the time that they did have some runners on here and there, it's like Castillo was able to bear down. And those are the type of performances that you expect out of your aces. I mean, you know, we expected that out of Manoah. We expected Manoah to go deep into the game and continue to do what he's been doing. Obviously, he had a bit of a hiccup in the first inning. But hey, nobody hurt. I mean, you still were going to have to score runs to win. It wasn't going to stay 0-0-0-0 forever. So it was going to be who makes the first mistake and what team takes advantage of it. The Seattle Mariners made him pay in the first inning, and that's all Castillo needed. Castillo could have only had one run, man. Seriously, he could have had one run. He could have just been winning 1-0, and it would have been enough that night. Like, that's how good he was. It's not easy, man. Like, we get to see it live, but then you have the TV feed around the stadium, and you're just seeing the way these pitches are moving, and you're like, that is completely unfair. Like, what do you do? Travis Snyder was another guy that was sitting next to me, and I'm like, what do you do there? He's like, dude. He just started laughing. These are hitters. These are guys that played in the big leagues, that hit in the big leagues, and they're just like, that is completely on another level of filthiness. And again, Friday was tough, but again, it was, you know, there's a reason why they did these wild card games, and if it was just one game thing, they would have been done, and that was it. But the good thing was that they had a second chance to come and get them. And yeah, we'll get into that game here soon.
And now we'll get into that. So that's Friday night's game. Again, a change in things compared to the way things used to be, where if it was the old days, the wild card game, one and done. And there are lots of teams that were undone by great starts. You know, obviously, Madison Bumgarner is one that comes to mind, who pitched the Giants through at least two really good wild card starts. What's his name? That dude with the muscles for the Cubs.
Arrieta.
Jake Arrieta had a couple great starts, pitched the Cubs through a couple times, but it happens. But the Jays had the chance to come back on Saturday, and, you know, Caitlin and I broke this down, you know, in a lot of different ways. Everything that could have gone right went right for the Jays over the first few innings. They really got to Robbie Ray. They put up 8 runs. They're up 8-1. And then, of course, the Mariners start chipping away. Those chipping away and the chipping away started to have those repercussions. And this is what I talked about with some folks, and I talked about with Caitlin as well. Like, if the Jays leave the bases loaded in one inning, so say it's 12-1, you know, or 9 or 11-1, so they add a couple more there, changes things. Of course, the Carlos Santana home run changes things. Then you're not able to, say, get George Springer out of the game. You're not able to make some switches, and you're maybe able to go to Yusei Kikuchi, for example, and spare some of the bigger arms. But at what point did you feel like this is really slipping away, when you're there in the stadium and you, as you said, the sound of silence, 49,000 people dead silent, sounding like a gigantic funeral, you know, even before, you know, or, you know, in the aftermath of that, of the Springer collision with Bo Bichette. But was there a moment where you were like, oh boy, this is bad?
Let's start from the beginning. Obviously, they got off to a great start, and I'll tell you what, I thought the atmosphere on Friday was great. Saturday was even better, man. Like, it was like everyone, obviously it's a weekend. I took the GO train again, and it was even more packed. And I was like, godly, this is dope. This is dope. This is what it's all about. And even went to the Sportsnet bar to have a beer before the game just to kind of get ready and just kind of enjoy. Like, again, I wanted to enjoy all the surroundings. I wanted to enjoy the atmosphere and just seeing the Sportsnet bar and grill at the hotel at the Marriott right there at the stadium and just seeing all the Jays fans pumped up. It was cool. And everything started off great for the Jays, man. I mean, when you jump to a, 8-1 lead and you have Kevin Gausman going, you're just like, man, and he is dealing. He was doing his thing. And I felt like, to me, and this is not criticizing John Schneider or anything like that, but to me, you're paying a guy, you know, $100 million or over $100 million. I'm letting him finish off that inning. Looking back at it and just the way it turned out, and I'm not saying because Santana hit a grand slam or anything. It was as soon as I saw John come out. I thought Schneider was going to come out and just say, you're my guy. Get me through this guy. And if I lose with Kevin Gausman, I feel I'm fine. Because this is my guy. This is my horse. He's been my horse all year. He got the bases loaded. He got two outs. Let me tell you, Drew, when you have bases loaded like that and you get two quick outs, the adrenaline rush that goes through your body is on another level. The juices flow way differently. You're like, you start feeling the crowd. You're like, okay, like, yeah, this is my game. This is my game. And I felt like Gausman felt a little bit of that. And like I said, when I saw Schneider walk out, I was like, he's going to give him a pump up talk and he's going to walk back and this crowd is going to go crazy. And that didn't happen. And I was like, oh boy. Like, that's where I was like, oh boy. Like, okay, like Mazza, he's been good. He's been solid. Again, a mainstay in that bullpen. And they flipped Santana around, and you might know better than this, but I don't know what the splits are. Santana batting right-handed as opposed to left-handed, if he's better on the right-handed side or the left-handed side, but maybe our listeners would want to hear about that. But to me, again, he's an all or nothing guy, right? At this point in his career, he's thinking one thing: I'm going to hit a home run and that's it.
To me, he's even more just like an on-base guy. You know, he was basically like a league average hitter this year. He hit a lot of his home runs from the left side, but overall, his numbers were better from the right side. You know, again, not as high on the on-base side, but overall, his OPS was way higher from the right. Not as many home runs, because just from a lack of plate appearances. As a Royal, he had an 867 OPS hitting right-handed. As a Mariner, he was 735 hitting right-handed versus 624 and 675. So, like, overall, better numbers from the one side, and that was just this year. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it's always been in his career, although it kind of does look like that's how it's always been in his career. So I would tend to agree, and that's something I hadn't necessarily thought of. Number one, he's your ace. This is what you paid this guy, you know, big bucks for. But the other thing is, like, it's also 8-1, right? It's 8-1, and you're looking to play another game tomorrow. Is he done? Are you hoping to use him tomorrow? If not, maybe I'm looking to soak up another inning. Let's get out of this. Get out of this, and then maybe, you know, we'll see how it goes. If you get Santana, maybe you go one more inning for me. He's at, 85 pitches or something like that? Give me one more.
He was at 95.
95, okay. So, yeah, but
that probably would have been it.
Yeah, okay. Get me out of here. Let's let Mazza get a clean inning. But in the end, it didn't work. But that was the one for me that I tweeted about it, like, this is one of those things that, because I, in my head, I was, as I told Caitlin last week, I was very much like, you got to get Springer out of the game. Like, his hand is messed up. He is favoring it. He's favoring it in the field. He's favoring it at the plate. I'm like, get him off the field as soon as you can, and the game's out of reach. But then when you give up those runs, now you can't. You know, when they had to go to Romano in the eighth, that to me, that was like, this is real bad.
Yeah. And this is the thing about the playoffs too. Like, Frank Thomas hit on it last night, Drew. And he said, I mean, he was talking about the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I feel like it happens in the playoffs. Like, it's like everyone just gets out of whack. Like, everyone starts pitching different innings that they're not used to. Like, Jimmy Garcia is your eighth inning guy, has been your eighth inning guy almost all season. And it's like, we start messing, like, oh yeah, let's bring him in the sixth. Let's bring him in, you know, here and there. Everything kind of gets lost in transition. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel like when guys have their roles, they feel comfortable in those roles. I get it. You're going to ask them to do a little bit more in the playoffs, but you know, when you're used to pitching either the seventh or the eighth, but now you're coming in the like the fifth or sixth, and I feel like it throws everything off. And now I get it. You know, you want to face your best reliever sometimes in certain parts of the lineup because, you know, the best part of the lineup is coming up and that's your best reliever. I get that. But I just feel like sometimes it throws these guys off, and it's something that maybe sometimes they're not comfortable in. And for me, again, going back to Gausman, it was like, that's my guy. I'm riding with him. And I'm telling you, man, like I speak on that adrenaline rush that you get from getting two outs with the bases loaded and now feeling that I'm the man here. I'm going to get out of this inning. I'm going to make this place explode. And I was feeling that till the change happened. And even when Santana hit the grand slam, I was like, okay, you come back and steal another run. You're up 9-4, I believe, 9-5. And you're like, okay, you're still feeling great. And man, everything that could have gone bad that eighth inning went bad. And again, it was crazy. Just obviously Anthony Bass has been pretty consistent, and it's just like he just didn't have it that night, right? I mean, it's just that's part of the game. And obviously you bring in Romano and you just kind of had to roll the dice at that point. And
I would say less of roll the dice, more than like that's you shooting your shot, right? When you bring Romano in there like that, this is it, right? Like this is our one chance. And then the pitch count starts to climb up and it's like, okay, well now they're in deep. They're in a bit of trouble.
Deep.
They're in deep when they...
Because I'm sure you thought the same thing. You're like, man, if Romano gets out, like whatever, if he gives up, you know, one run and he still finishes the game and they win, you're like, man, I don't know if I can bring him. He probably would have said, yeah, I can come back tomorrow. But I'm sure it would have been like a little bit of like, damn, like, are we sure we want to bring him back tomorrow? Because he threw, you know, 35, 40 pitches, whatever.
So one question that will kind of leads into the after we'll finish talking about this a little bit more. A lot of people are not happy with John Schneider about that choice, the one, the Gausman choice in particular. Some folks are, you know, and Ross Atkins didn't confirm yesterday that they're going to give him the job on a full-time basis. I don't think it would be, but do you think that that's like something that maybe would disqualify him from being the full-time manager?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so, because I feel like that decision wasn't... I get he's the manager, but you know we feel like sometimes a lot of decisions are made not just by one person in today's game. I don't think it should dictate his job, because he still came in and did a tremendous job throughout the whole season. He brought this team together, and it almost seemed like they enjoyed playing for him. I mean, Matt Chapman, who's been a pretty vocal leader and a tremendous guy in that clubhouse, he came out and said, I'd love to have Schneider back. And I feel like if anything, you should listen to your players and talk to your players. If you're the GM of the team, Ross Atkins, obviously call your players, call your star players. Hey, what do you got? Give me some info. I want to know more and this and that. And I feel like they're your biggest resource in all this. I feel like managers make, you know, sometimes make mistakes or sometimes doubt certain moves in the playoffs, but it never cost them their job. And obviously I know Schneider was playing with almost like house money because he wasn't the guy that started the season. I think you still give him a shot and you bring that staff back. I think that to me, he earned it, man. And again, I feel like the respect that he had from those guys in the clubhouse, to me, it's what matters. And I feel like every chance that he had to stand up for his guys, he did. I mean, even when Springer got hit, I mean, he came out and you can tell he was jawing something to the umpire and, for me, that matters a lot. A guy that's going to be a player's coach and that's going to stand up for you. And I feel like he did that. I feel like him and Pete had a great relationship. And, you know, obviously it's out of his control, but I don't think that one call should definitely cost him his job. I think you learn from it. Just like there's plenty of mistakes from players that happen during the game. I'm sure they learn from it and they're like, all right, we're ready to come back next year. You know, just because somebody made a mistake during a game, you're not going to release them. You know, if you're a player, obviously a manager's a little different, but I still think it's kind of pretty similar. And I don't think that should cost him his job.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I feel like I agree. My understanding of the manager's job, and I don't know if you've been seeing any of these excerpts from Joe Maddon's book, just talking about the value of kind of not having the front office interfere, but also my sense is the manager's job is to manage relationships, to develop relationships, to develop trust, to understand who your guys are, what makes them tick, and how you can personally help the organizational's larger focus of like putting this guy in a position to succeed. I don't think that at any time it seemed like the moment was too big for John Schneider. I think that he definitely seemed like he was doing exactly that. He was trying to put his team in a position to win the game. He also kind of was with a little bit of an eye to the game after. I think that that decision, as well as maybe the one that we'll talk about next, are things that he can learn from, right? Whether or not you should trust your ace. If he and Gausman sat down and talk, or if there's any kind of, like, you know, what kind of conversations they might have over the winter, if Gausman can say to him, like, you know, I know next time you can trust me, I'm going to get him, or whatever those conversations go, I feel like Johnson and I will learn from that.
I had those conversations with managers in the past. You're right. I mean, that's a great point, where you go into the manager's office and you say, don't take me out. I got you. I'm not going to let you down. Like, I got you. And I feel like sometimes a manager needs to feel reassurance, right? I mean, he wants to know that his guy is confident that he's going to be able to get out of situations like that. And again, I always reference this guy, and I'll continue to reference him for the rest of my life. Roy Halladay always told me, finish what you start, man. Finish what you freaking start. That was always his thing. Like, if you go 5 innings, finish those 5 innings. If you go 6 innings, finish those 6 innings. Like, nothing against the relievers, but you don't want to leave, you know, guys on base and then leave it in somebody else's hands. He's like, that's why I work hard. I take a lot of pride in that. If I have 2 outs and I have bases loaded, I got to get out of it somehow, some way. And I feel like that's the mentality that sometimes you got to take as a pitcher. Finish what you start. No matter how many innings it is, just finish what you start.
Now, the other question, I guess, is the one thing that I've alluded to and I've mentioned a couple different times is the idea that maybe they should have taken George Springer out in exchange for Jackie Bradley in the late stages of the game. You've got Romano out there. He's coming into his second inning. You are in full on hold the lead. That was the mentality. It was just hold the fort, prevent defense. They got 6 defensive backs out there. They got the nickel back. They got the dime back. That's my thought. It's like, you need Bradley out there, A, because he's a better defender. Not that George Springer is a bad defender, but the thing that I keep saying is that George Springer was hurting. Now, obviously, having a couple little, you know, the relative closeness of the game meant that, well, you don't want to take the bat out of his hands. Maybe you don't want to give an at-bat to Jackie Bradley Jr. in the bottom of the ninth inning in a big situation. If you hold the lead, it doesn't come to that. But the big thing and a big point of contention has been, obviously, the ball that J.P. Crawford hit into shallow center field. And I'm interested to hear what you said, because you said you've had some conversations with some folks about their perspective on that. Obviously, a ball hit into a really tough spot. You know, even though it wasn't hit hard, it was hit high. I think it had like a 500 expected batting average just because of where it was placed. Like, those balls turn into hits not infrequently. In my mind, in the parallel universe, Jackie Bradley Jr. is standing there waiting for it, because he's just that much of an exemplary outfielder. But that's not what happened. Obviously, there was a collision. Obviously, the worst case scenario, number one, for the health and well-being of George Springer. We hope he's okay. Reports are he's got a strain to his shoulder, I think, and he did suffer a concussion waiting to travel. But they're hopeful that he's going to come all the way back. But just the in-game implications could not have been a worse outcome. Even if he just stands there and picks it up off the ground, 2-run score, you know, still 2 guys on. But I don't know. What did you think about that play, especially in the aftermath, as you've been able to have some conversations or look at it again?
Yeah. Well, really quick, Drew, before we dive into this topic, like, the Whit Merrifield move, did he get taken out because he got hit in the head?
I think so. Or did I'm just very confident that he came up because he got hit in the head.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a pretty interesting move. And people have been saying, like, would you have put Jackie Bradley and maybe move the corner guys, maybe Teoscar to left and then Springer to right, and put in Jackie Bradley, who's a better defender, obviously, than Raimel Tapia. And because a lot of it goes back to that play where he dove and he missed it, and I feel like it kind of started there. Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering why Whit Merrifield was taken out, and if it was because he got hit in the head, because we've seen guys get hit in the head and they stay in the game and it's totally fine. And if you ask me, like, who would I rather have defensively out there on left field, obviously Whit Merrifield, right? I mean, I feel like he might get to that ball, but who knows? Anyways, back to the Bichette-Springer play. One, what people need to understand is everything happens so fast. We watch it slowly. We can watch it 10 times over and over and over and over and over and over again. That play happened so fast. That ball, to me too, Drew, it seemed like that ball had a weird spin. It was kind of like slicing the way it came off the bat. And it's crazy to hear those numbers that it had a 500 batting average just because of where it was placed. And again, I asked Travis Snyder, and I had a chance to sit with Vernon Wells, who threw out the first pitch that night too, two outfielders. And I said, what's the play there? What happened there? Vernon, who's obviously a Gold Glove center fielder, he's like, to me, he's like, when I'm watching that, I got to know my pitcher. because obviously Springer's playing no doubles, and Vernon's like, to me, I know, is JP Crawford a guy that I have to worry about that's going to hit something over my head? And I said, probably not. He's like, so then I'm playing him not shallow, but I'm playing him in a place where maybe he's gonna try and do that, where he's gonna try and dunk one in. And he's like, to me, George Springer was probably playing a little bit too deep because he's playing no doubles. And I get that. That's probably coming from the dugout. But me being the center fielder that I am, and I know how much ground I can cover going back, I know that nothing's going to fall right in front of me. And I thought that was an interesting point. And I was like, you see, he's like, so when they replayed it, he's like, you see, if you see Springer, he's coming in from like, it seemed like he was coming from the warning track and he's coming full speed. And this is the thing. People want to place blame on Bo, but to me, it's two dudes trying to make a play, trying to make unbelievable play. There's 50,000 people that are going crazy. Who knows if Springer ever called him off? For an infielder, you're taught. If you hear the outfielder call you off, you do peel off. You peel off. And I felt like Bo Bichette got there in plenty of time. I just think the ball kind of had some weird slice because where you see it drop, it's kind of like it just went whoop away from them. And obviously, and I felt like Bo probably felt like he had a good angle to it. And right at the end, it kind of just, I don't know, it moved a little bit, didn't it, Drew?
It seemed like it. Like, yeah.
And I just felt like, again, it's two dudes trying to make a play, trying to make a game-saving play, and it didn't work out. And obviously, all hell broke loose. And everyone's saying, well, Bo could have peeled out. Shoot, Bo's coming in full speed too. Like, how? Like, it's easy to dissect it from here. It's easy to say, oh, he should have done this. He shouldn't. It's two dudes trying to go after a ball and trying to make a play, trying to make a game-saving play. Springer's coming in hot. Bo's going in hot too. And unfortunately, that happened. But listening to Vernon and in his knowledge of it, he's like, you know what? For me, I would have played here because I know he's not going to fly me. I just know that. I just, you know, knowing who he is, he's not a guy that's going to hit a home run. Maybe he runs into one every now and then. But right there, I'm playing. I just know the pitcher. I know the hitter. I know what he's trying to do. And maybe that doesn't happen if he's playing probably not shallow, but he's probably playing normal. But again, I get it. I mean, you're trying no doubles. You're trying to minimize the damage in case something falls in front of you and nothing gets by you. But it was interesting listening to Vernon and his perspective on it. And he's like, yeah, maybe George, for me, he's like, maybe he was playing a little bit too deep. But again, maybe that's what they said to do from the dugout, no doubles. And again, I mean, it's unfortunate what happened, and I hope Springer's okay. And obviously, Bo, he was crushed, man. He was crushed. And to sit here and say, oh yeah, like he lost us a game. No, bullshit. Nobody, no. Like everything happened collectively. And again, it's a play that is going to be talked about, I feel like, for a long time, Drew. Maybe till the day they win a playoff series and everyone forgets about it. But it's going to be talked about a long time. And it's unfortunate, but to me, it's like, man, like you can't place blame on either guy. Again, you're taught to go get the ball. When we're doing spring training drills, your infielders and outfielders, we all do this drill. And when infielders hear the outfielder call the ball, they move out of the way. And I just felt like maybe Springer never said anything, and that's why Bo kept going for the ball.
I was just watching it while you were talking. Not that I wasn't in rapt attention to what you were saying, no. But the angles aren't great. But it doesn't look like Springer was calling him off. Because I think for the exact reason that you said and as relayed through from Vernon Wells, like he had a long way to go, and I don't know that he thought he would have caught it. And if he calls off Bo on a ball that he was prepped to dive headlong for, so that's a hard one to call. I think makes it really tough. Now we can move on from this game. It obviously was super disappointing, a really difficult loss to take, as been evidenced by the reaction to it. There are a lot of emotions are running high. Reactions are running really hot in terms of what the Jays should do next. And as you said, when they next win a playoff series, I guess the question becomes, do you think that this team, as currently constructed, not necessarily saying run it back exactly the same as now, but do you think this team is good enough to win a playoff series or two or get to the World Series? Or do you think that there's a lot of work to do?
There's some work to do. Obviously, I feel like with anything, there's always work to do. In your team. And if you feel like, oh no, this is a World Series team right now, then you're crazy. You know, I feel like there's always room for improvement, especially in the game of baseball. There's services needed somewhere, some way. And I feel like it'll be interesting what they do. Again, I feel like people are still trying to like get over the loss on Saturday. And shoot, it hit me hard, man. I mean, I was on my way out the next day. I didn't even want to stay till Monday. And I had a flight on Monday. And I was like, nah, I'm leaving. That's how depressed I was. I felt like I played, Drew. I felt like, I think it's my connection, you know, to Pete Walker, to John Schneider. And I know how hard those guys work. And it was deflating. It was one of those things where I came home and I like laid in bed for that night, and I was like, I couldn't sleep. I was just like thinking about the game. But going forward, I mean, I feel like there's always room for improvement, whether it's improving your bullpen, adding a bat, that's always going to help, I think, in my opinion. Obviously, the starters, you know, what do you do with Kikuchi? How do you approach that if he comes in next season and he's struggling again and that stuff? Do you just like end up releasing him? Do you eat up that contract? How does Ryu come back? That's another question mark. Stripling, I mean, what is it going to take to re-sign him and bring him back? Are you willing to spend that kind of money to bring him back? If not, then you have to look elsewhere and fill in that rotation spot, because again, Jose Berrios, like we need a better year out of him, right? I mean, going forward, I mean, what he did this year, if you ask him, I guarantee you he's how can he be happy about that, those performances, right? I mean, his numbers, obviously he had some great starts in between there, but the consistency of it, I guess, that's where I feel like it kind of faltered for him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
One thing I was thinking about, and I've seen this point made in a couple of ways, we talk about bullpen arms, we talk about the way they win a playoff series. And one of the things I saw was about the lack of experience. Maybe the Blue Jays need more experience in the bullpen. You know, you look at the names of the guys that came into that game for Seattle, guys who pitched big innings, not a lot of experience, right? Diego Castillo, maybe the most experienced guy, he had no clue where the ball was going, hit Whit Merrifield in the head. I have to believe, that was in the fifth inning. I can't see them taking out Merrifield for defense in the fifth inning. Like, I think that was out of concern. It was an 8-1 game. Let's get him out of here. Don't risk it. Whatever. Festa, Penn Murphy, you know, Munoz throwing a zillion miles an hour. And then they go to a starter to close it out. I can't help but wonder if maybe there wasn't even just this much more faith in Jose Berríos on Saturday afternoon, then maybe they don't put him in the game at some point. Close this out. Go two. Go three. Just shut this down. I don't think that would have been the worst idea at all. But if they're not feeling that confident about him, I think that that says a lot, and that he has a lot to go back and go back to the drawing board this winter, I think. And his progress is a really important one, I think. You know, thinking about the money that, you know, the Blue Jays have spent a lot of money in the last few years, and it, which flies in the face of the folks who think that I've seen this thing, well, they're only making the team good enough to allow Rogers to make a profit. And it's like, man, they spent a ton of money. They spent, like, in the past three off seasons, from 2019-20 off season, the one after that, and then this past one, they spent like $300 million on pitchers. Like, they're not going half-assed. And the one example that I've used is the acquisition of Matt Chapman, which you and I have talked about so much. But if the Blue Jays and their front office and their ownership or whatever weren't committed to winning, Kevin Smith would have been the starting third baseman for the Blue Jays. He makes the minimum, right? Kevin Biggio's in his first or second year of arbitration. Santiago Espinal is, I don't even think he's arbitration eligible yet, maybe 1 year in. Like, those three guys would have been a cheaper version of what they did. But instead, they went and traded for for Matt Chapman. They give him $20 million. You know, that really starts to drive up that bill, the overall kind of salary, the payroll. But I don't know where the Blue Jays are going to have a lot of money. And the Ross Stripling is an interesting one, because, you know, I'm sure that they'd like to stay, he and his family. This is his chance to get paid, right? Like, he's not going to have another chance through free agency coming off a great season like that. So it's really interesting. And, well, let me put it this way to you. When I look at the Blue Jays, I think that what we saw this year was in some ways disappointing, but in other ways, they're a really good team with a lot of really good and fun players, which I think is easy to overlook. We get really so focused on, like, rings, 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 rings. It's like, I would much rather follow this Blue Jays team than a lot of teams, even teams that are a little bit better. There's so many fun personalities. They have a lot of fun on the field. They play a really exciting, you know, offensive brand of baseball. I could think of worse things to do with your time in the summer. How many Blue Jays would you say had a breakout season this year? Stripling? It's one?
Yeah, 100%. Stripling, Romano. I mean, we didn't know what we were going to expect out of him. Obviously, the team came in with really who's the closer, like, type thing, and I think he kind of settled that debate quick.
But still, he was still good last year, right, in terms of adding that production. And I think, you know, Kirk is the big one, right? At the end of the year, when you look at what Kirk did, you couldn't have expected that.
No, I mean, at the halfway point, Espinal to me had impressed me, and I was like, wow, like, now, if he can get a full season out of him, and I'm not saying he's got to go crazy, like hit 300, but if we can get a solid season out of him, he's an everyday guy. And I feel like towards the end when he kind of wore off, it kind of hurt the bottom part of the lineup. It really did. And obviously, Gurriel being out, I mean, that didn't help at all, man. I mean, that's a guy that was, you know, having a pretty solid season, and he was hot before he got hurt. Hot. And I think that hurt them. And yeah, I think Stripling, obviously, Kirk, Romano, I think, solidified that back end of the bullpen, and everyone's like, okay, we got our close, we're good. Now, what pieces do we put in front of him in order for our bullpen to be that much better for next season? So aside from that, I mean, trying to think. I mean, Bo, I mean, his September was unbelievable.
Bo's September brought him to where we would have expected him to be by and large at the end of the year. He's worth four wins above replacement. He's like 20% better than the average hitter at the plate. It didn't turn out. It wasn't the word consistent. But again, Bo Bichette is the exact guy that I love to use as a counterpoint to when people say, well, you wish they would produce consistently. It's like, okay, well, you know, Mike Trout goes 2 for 5 every day, but nobody else does, right? But Bichette's now, effort is consistent though, right? Bichette is a consistency of effort. He works hard every single day. It was only at the end of the season when he was able to sort of put it all together.
Yeah, and the crazy thing, like, that I hear from people, and like my aunt mentions when they lost, was like, yeah, now this will wipe the smile off their faces and them smirking around having fun. And I'm like, oh my
God. Is that what you want? Is that what you want?
Like, what do you
look, if that's like, if that's your not you, the person who's adding, yeah. Ricky Romero,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Go and cheer for the fucking Yankees. Just go and buy that. You've already got one in your closet. I know you do. You got a Yankees cap in there. Just pull it on. Cheer for the Yankees. They don't have any fun ever. They don't even allow them to have goddamn beards. So just go cheer for the Yankees. Make it just a grim march to October, and anything less than the World Series is a bitter disappointment. I would not want to live that way. So if that's your perspective, sure, grab the pinstripes, throw them on. It'll feel like $1 million, like you're dancing with the devil. Have yourself a great time. Watch, go in there. You're going to piss Brandon Morrow off, but you go in, you watch the Yankeeography. You're going to just take it all in, the cult. But you know what? The Blue Jays are not that team. The Blue Jays are fun, and I don't think that's a bad thing whatsoever. I do think there are moves that they can make, you know, and one of the things that I really keyed on, and when I don't know if you heard or saw any of Ross Atkins' comments, but he said they're going to evaluate whether or not the team offensively, you know, productive as it was, incredibly productive, the best offense in baseball by OPS plus, if the sameness of their team made them vulnerable in certain instances, like when they're going up against Luis Castillo, could they use a different look here and there? Now, they do have different looks in terms of guys like Gurriel and Kirk, who really put it in play, who don't have that much swing and miss, but there is obviously work to do there. There are potential trades to be made, and I don't know what you think about this. I think Lourdes Gurriel is a free agent at the end of next season, I think, maybe the year after. Teoscar Hernandez is potentially will reach free agency at the end of next season. Those are a couple bigger ones. And then there's three catchers, and that's a lot of catchers, and I don't know. I mean, is Danny Jansen a guy that maybe you can move? He's got 2 years left before free agency. Or is the other pieces, are any of those the kind of moves you're willing to entertain when you're looking to maybe make the Blue Jays, if not necessarily upgrade with a capital U, but like have a bit of a different look from those Jays next year?
Yeah, I mean, three catchers, man. Shoot. Like, at what point do you... Kirk, obviously, you know, showed us what he can do this season. You have Gabriel Moreno, who's one of the top prospects in baseball. Do you say, like, okay, these are my two guys? I don't know.
See, to me, that's really tough.
Those are tough questions.
That's tough. Like, I think the Blue Jays have more equity in Danny Jansen than almost any other player on the roster. Like, they've invested so much in him. And I think it might be the kind of thing where, like, Danny Jansen's worth more to the Blue Jays than he is to anybody else. If you're on the outside looking in, you see Danny Jansen, you see a guy who's productive, but a guy who's hurt often. And all the other stuff you don't see. But like, the Blue Jays know who Danny Jansen is. They've been consistent in this too, right? From the like when he was barely a rookie, they included him in all that kind of team building stuff. He's been part of the Bo Vlad sort of group all the way through. I can't see them making a move with him. I think that he's worth more to the Blue Jays than he is to anybody else. You know, the thing that I'm going to say that I've said a bunch of times, the things that Alejandro Kirk does well are clear. He hits line drives. He doesn't strike out. And he frames the low strike. But I don't know if that's the business that I want to be in. On top of the fact that he'll never have more value than he has right now as a trade piece, I think you could go and do really well to trade Alejandro Kirk, which sounds crazy to say you're going to trade like a four-win catcher, you know, who's only, what is he, 24? Who's not a free agent for however many more years. But I think that he can make the most impact in terms of offsetting his loss by really bringing some nice pieces back that could help make the Blue Jays look a little bit more like a complete team in 2023.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because Joe Siddle tweeted this about an hour ago. He goes, outside of the box target for Blue Jays offseason, Christian Vasquez, experience behind the plate for a team ready to win now, as it was this year, but slipped away. Keep Jansen, get pitching for Kirk.
Joe Siddle's a smart man. He's a wise, wise individual, no doubt. Good-looking Canadian catcher. You know, we are legion. That's sort of the way that the things that I would look at, right? He's like, what can you do for Kirk? You know, Teoscar Hernandez, I would rather die than see him play for another team, but that's just me. That's like my own personal thing. I got so much love for Teoscar Hernandez. It is crazy. He is so fun and is also so good. He's become a much better outfielder than he was years ago. He's a very good athlete, very athletic, really runs the bases pretty well. I ride hard for Teoscar Hernandez, so I don't know that I'm necessarily in a hurry to trade him.
And obviously, you have to start thinking about the future. How are we going to re-sign Bo Bichette? How are we going to re-sign Vladimir Guerrero? What is it going to take to get those guys? Alec Manoah, I'm sure, is going to be in the works soon before that. I mean, we see what Alex Anthopoulos is doing in Atlanta. I mean, that freaking guy has signed everyone. Took that the core of that team is like signed for like the next 7 years, it seemed like, whether they're good deals, shitty deals, he somehow got it done. And I'm interested to see how they go about this business with Bo, with Vladdy, with Alec and stuff like that, because it's going to cost them a good chunk of change, and there's going to be some decisions to be made. And obviously you want to be smart about the financial part of it. You understand that, you get that, and
maybe they retain two out of the three. Maybe they have to part ways with one. Like, there's so many things that can happen. And obviously, Ross Atkins and Shapiro have a lot of work to do ahead, because as someone was once told me, the more you keep playing, the more your stock keeps rising and rising and rising and rising and rising and rising. And you put up numbers and it keeps rising and rising. So I'm sure there's going to be talks, or I'm sure there's talks already of how are we going to re-sign certain guys for the future, because you can't let it, you know, just wait till the last year of arbitration and all of a sudden you're like, oh shoot, like, we haven't signed this guy and and here we are, like, he might walk at the end of the season. So I think you want to have a plan for that, and I'm sure they do. And obviously pitching is always important, man. I mean, the more pitching you have, the better your team is going to be. To the people that keep saying like, oh yeah, we should have had Castillo, no, what Seattle offered to the Cincinnati Reds was above and beyond what probably anybody else had in their minor league system.
It blew the market. It blew the whole pitching trade market away. Like, there weren't that many big trades that were made after that because they paid so much. Everybody was like, well, we want two, you know, really high ceiling shortstops. And it's like, well, I'm not giving you that. I don't have that to give.
Yeah. And maybe the Toronto Blue Jays didn't have that kind of intel either. Maybe they didn't have, like, they're still trying to build a farm system, a solid farm system. And, you know, at times we were wondering, like, hey, who's, if it's not Nate Pearson, who's the next guy up? You and I talked about it plenty of times. They're like, well, you have nobody. And it's like, well, that has to change, in my opinion. Like, the minor league system has to be, that's obviously something that just you have to continue to get better every single year. And I feel like everyone understands that. And I'm sure there's young and up and coming guys. But in order to make those type of trades, you better have some firepower to offer. And obviously, the Mariners this year had that, and that's why they were able to land Luis Castillo. You're telling me that if the Yankees had a chance to acquire Luis Castillo over Frankie Montas, they I'm sure they would have, but they obviously didn't have those pieces to send over to Cincinnati. Again, when Seattle kind of puts that on paper and say, this is what we're going to offer you, they probably went around and said, let's see what we can get out of other teams, if anybody can match this. And it's not a one-way street. People think it's a one-way street. Oh, the Blue Jays should have acquired Luis Castillo. Well, shit, the Blue Jays didn't have those assets. I'm sorry, they didn't. Their minor league system is not as strong as you think they are. And, oh, well, they should trade them. You know, they should have given up Bo Bichette. And it's like, now, like, that's just dumb.
No, you're talking crazy. So let me ask you, this might be the last question of the year even. If we sit back here and it's March or April, so number one thing I was thinking about when you were talking also is the difference between, you know, you mentioned Alex Anthopoulos, who's got so many of these good deals done with key members of the Braves. You know, the contract that you signed was different. The Blue Jays haven't signed a lot of deals like that, right? These kind of like pre-arbitration deals. If we reconvene in April and we're talking about this, have the Blue Jays signed either Vlad or Bo or both? And which one would you prefer, or do, if it was your money, who are you signing long term? I'm putting you on the spot.
Both, man. I mean, shoot. To me, I'm both. Like, it'd be hard for me to choose one because I think they complement each other so well. And we saw it various times this season where Bo would jump on Vladdy's ass, and I feel like Vladdy sometimes probably needs that, you know. And I think there's only one guy that can do that, and it's Bo Bichette, because they've grown up together. They know what it's like. They've been more than teammates, I feel like. They've been so close through their minor league career up until now. And I've heard stories about them in the minor leagues, like challenging each other and going at each other. And that to me is what it's all about. I mean, it'd be tough for me to part ways with one or the other. Obviously, we know what Vladdy can bring to the table. And if you ask him, it's probably not the year that he wanted to have. He was expecting more out of himself. But I feel like, hey, man, again, it's baseball. It happens. You live and you learn from it. And you continue. There's one thing you can do. That's get better this offseason. So then next year you come and you wreck shit again, you know, and get back to the guy that we're used to seeing. I mean, Vladdy obviously showed flashes of it. You know, again, people want consistency, but like you mentioned, Mike Trout.
He's the only guy who's consistent every single day, 2-for-5, 1-for-4 with a walk.
And he's in a category of his own. Like, he's not just on another level. Yeah, man. I mean, if I'm leading that team, I want both those guys somehow, some way, as part of my future. And I'm sure people are so quick to jump against Bo Bichette and this and that, and he's selfish and he's this and he doesn't want to move to second base. I've heard that a lot, and it's like, man, like, what is, like, let the kid be, man. Like, I mean, he's still young. There's still a bright future ahead of him. And I, again, everything I hear from the coaches about who he is behind closed doors tells me everything I need to know. And at the end of the day, you want to sign good people, you want to sign great people, you know. And obviously we see the performances on TV, but it's how is he preparing? How is he getting ready? Can he make a change to this team? Does he make a difference in that clubhouse? That's the stuff that I'm looking for. And that's the stuff that obviously Atkins and Shapiro have the answers to. You know, I feel like one of the things that you can do is ask your players, ask the players around you. Like, I'm not saying be a snitch or anything like that, but get a feel for your players and how stuff works in the clubhouse and from the manager, and I'm sure that they're your best feedback. I mean, you can't just guess and say, I think Vladdy's gonna get three MVPs in the next 10 years. Like, you can't guess that. You know, it's not the way baseball works.
That said, I probably would give Vlad the money. If it's me, I'm gonna sign Vlad. I think that there's a little bit less risk. I think that there's a bit of risk in Bo Bichette's profile. And as we saw this year, there is that risk has its down points, its low end, and then it's you know, that reward high end, where at the end of the year his numbers are his numbers, and he's an incredibly productive player who plays, you know, really hard and works really hard too. So that's easy for Blue Jays fans to cheer for, which I think is something that we can always come back to, that this is an easy team to cheer for. And I know that the last week has been pretty tough, but I hope that the offseason we lose that sting and start to appreciate the team that's here, and that hope and believe that, as they've done each of the last 3 years, the people who make those decisions will continue to look to make the team better. They've seen what they need to see. They've seen the, you know, the Blue Jays are have gotten close. If the next goal is to get over that hump, I really hope that they'll continue to do that work and make some very tough decisions about what it's going to take to get them there in 2023. 2022 on Spinrate has been a blast. We're going to take a little bit of a break, as I understand it. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll be back and nobody knows. Make sure you subscribe. Before we go, subscribe so that when there is a new one, if something crazy happens, me, Ricky, Caitlin got to get together, break it down, you can make sure it's there. But either way, Ricky, it has been a pleasure, and I've had a great time chatting with you this season, and hopefully we can do it again sometime very soon.
Yeah, man. No, thank you. Thank you so much for welcoming me to the Spinrate family. It was fun. It was cool to chat about baseball. And one thing I told somebody this past week, and it's like, we're not always right. We have our opinions, and it's okay to disagree with us. That's what part of having good banter means. But we appreciate every single one of you guys for listening in, for tuning in, for following us throughout this Spinrate time. Because I did have a few people come up to me and say, "Man, I love listening to you and Drew on Spinrate," and I was like, "That's awesome! You know, that's what we're here for. That's why we do the show for you guys." And some people came up to me like, "Hey, man, I sometimes disagree with what you have to say on Spinrate," and that's totally fine.
Blame me.
I respect that. You know, I said I respect that, mm-hmm. man. I mean, I respect that 100%. I mean, this is what it's about. Nobody has the answers. We all wish we had the right answers, and we're gonna be wrong sometimes. Yeah. But we're going to offer our perspectives, and that's what was fun about doing this podcast. I learned a lot. Again, thank you, Drew, for everything, and it was fun, and I'm sure we're going to do it again. But yeah, thank you to everyone for tuning in this season. Obviously, it didn't end, but the good thing about baseball is, as they always say, there's always next year.
There's always next year. And, you know, what's the line about, I look out the window and wait for spring? That's what we're going to be doing. Again, thank you to everybody. Thank you, of course, to Caitlin McGrath, the third member, the other member of the Spinrate family. I think you said it right about it. We learned a lot. And if the worst thing you can say about us on this show, between you and me and Caitlin, is like, if we have an opinion, I think that, or a viewpoint, we're always willing to, like, consider new information, to think about things, to hear what other people have to say, to look at what the numbers have to say, to look at what happens on the field and look at different sources of information, and then just have fun and informative talks about it. And that's because that's really what we're doing. It's just two people who love baseball, three people who love baseball, talking about it and talking about the team that means a lot to them. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. Her name, wherever she is Caitlin McGrath. Thank you so much for tuning in this year on Spinrate. We'll be back before you know it with more edition here on The Athletic.
I want them to kick the shit out of the Orioles, man.